Hey guys, great to be here again at the front preaching, telling you a little bit about what I've been given as the topic for today. Does anybody remember when they were at school? And I appreciate for some of you, you may have to think back more than others. And do you remember there being any kinds of crazes that took place where maybe there was something you collected or some toys you played with and everybody started bringing them in and they caused so much of a problem for the school banned them? Can anybody think of any of those things? I remember Conkers got banned. They were very, very dangerous. Health and safety, nightmare. Yo-yos, they got banned. Can anybody think of anything that got banned when they were at school? A what?
Pikes and
halberds. Eric, what school did you go to? Medieval weaponry? Right. Yeah, I see where you're coming from. Well, I can announce this morning the most recent banned toy to take place in my school. Boys, do you just want to come to the front quickly for me? Just come to the front. Just come and stand here quickly. Round of applause, please. Gentlemen, can you hold up, please, and show in a united front to this generation's church what it is that has currently been banned? Just hold them up. It's a fidget spinner, ladies and gentlemen. It's a fidget spinner. Let's do a spin after three. You ready? One, two, three. Spin. Isn't that dangerous, ladies and gentlemen? Isn't that? Thank you very much, gentlemen. You may go to the back. Fidget spinners, the bane of schools across this country as I speak, fidget spinners, they spin and you fidget with them, hence the name. Do you know what, I discovered something a few weeks about fidget spinners, they are not fair, let me tell you why I know that fidget spinners are not fair. Some of you may notice a couple of weeks ago, I took my two children, Ollie and Caitlin, camping. I took them for 5 days on my own. I thought it would be good because I understand that sometimes my wife needs a break from me and from the kids. And I also bought us some tickets to go and see a show with a best friend. Aren't I a great husband? Hey, it doesn't need a break. Well, thank you. Not in other areas, but in this one, I think I might have won a few brownie points. And so I took Ollie and Caitlin, we went up to Northumberland, beautiful beaches, lovely campsite, great people there. And they took some holiday money, some of their savings that they were going to spend. Now, one day we were walking down the beach, and we went into one of those seaside kind of shops. You know the ones, I mean, that sell all the typical things like buckets and spades and sticks of rock and porcelain dogs, for some reason, was in this one. I don't know why I say that, it just sticks in my mind. And they were fidget spinners. And both of my kids kind of went into mental meltdown mode. Is, Dad, there's fidget spinners. Oh, we've got to buy a fidget spinner with our money. Now, I knew that Caitlin loved fidget spinners because for months she'd been going on to her mummy and daddy that for her birthday, could she have a fidget spinner, please? And Joe and I thought, yeah, that's probably a good thing. So we'd already bought her a fidget spinner for her birthday. So you understand, she's in this shop wanting to spend some of her hard-saved holiday money on another fidget spinner. I know she's going to get one. I said, Caitlin, do you remember you asked Mummy and Daddy for a fidget spinner for your birthday? Maybe you should just wait a few days till your birthday and not spend your money on a fidget spinner. Caitlin goes, Daddy, that's not fair. She says, that's not fair, Daddy, because that's my money and I can spend it on whatever I want. I thought, you know what? It's holiday. I said, okay, Caitlin, you can buy a fidget spinner. Ollie pipes up. Daddy, that's not fair. I want a fidget spinner too. I said, Ollie, I'm not stepping in your way. If you want to spend your money on a fidget spinner as well, you can. So my children walked out the shop, £4 the lighter, but the proud owner each of a fidget spinner. Now, that evening, as we got back to the campsite, Ollie, my youngest, he went and played in this playground on the campsite with some friends that he'd made there, and he stayed out quite late. The following morning at 5:30 in the tent, I wake up to Ollie screaming, Daddy, 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 and I'm rubbing sleep out of my eyes. Oh, what is it, son? Thinking that the tent's blown away or some Armageddon's come. It's, what's the matter? Daddy, I've lost my fidget spinner. I said, mate, have you looked in your sleeping bag? Have you looked under your pillow? Have you looked in your rucksack, in your pocket? It's going to be somewhere. He says, no, Daddy, you don't understand. I took my fidget spinner out when I was playing last night. And before I climbed a tree, I put it on the floor and I left it there. Daddy, we need to go back now to get my fidget spinner. I said, mate, you're on a campsite full of kids under the age of 9. A fidget spinner is left on the floor in a popular area. Kids see that, they're going to think the fidget spinner fairy's been and left them a gift. They're not leaving it. Oh, no, Daddy, that's not fair. It's my fidget spinner. He says, that's not fair, Daddy. We've got to go out and look for it now. So I kind of pulled some clothes on half-heartedly, staggered out. Sure enough, no fidget spinner. And this has ruined the rest of the holiday for him because he's lost his fidget spinner. This isn't fair. So, Daddy, we need to go and find it. We'll go and ask at the shop at Lost Property. We'll ask every child. Well, we did all that, no fidget spinner. I felt a bit bad for him. Yes, he should have looked after it, but I felt a bit sorry for him. So I decided that I would spend some of my money on a fidget spinner secretly, and then I'd give him a fidget spinner because I knew that Caitlin was going to get another fidget spinner for her birthday. And so on that occasion, I thought, I'll present him with this extra fidget spinner. You think he'd like that, wouldn't you? So the time came for Joe and I to give Caitlin a fidget spinner. And at that occasion, I said, Ollie, here's a fidget spinner. There you go. That's not fair, Daddy. Why not? It's not the same one as the one I lost. I said, but Ollie, it's a free fidget spinner. At which point, Caitlin pipes up, Daddy, that's not fair. Ollie's got a free fidget spinner. He should have looked after his first one, Daddy. He shouldn't be allowed another fidget spinner. I went, Caitlin. Here's a present that Mummy and Daddy have wrapped up for you. Would you like to open this present? Now, we had bought Caitlin a state-of-the-art flashing lights LED fidget spinner, ladies and gentlemen. It was amazing. And so she opened it, she looked at it, and she looked at us. And guess what she said? Daddy, that's not fair. I said, Caitlin, you tell me why Mummy and Daddy, having spent so much money on such an amazing fidget spinner, one that lights up when you press the buttons, why is that not fair? She said, Daddy, it's not fair because, can anybody guess why my 8-year-old daughter thought it was not fair? No, you're wrong. I'll tell you why it wasn't fair. It wasn't fair because she says, Daddy, when you press the buttons, the light comes on, but that's because it's powered by a battery and eventually the battery's going to go flat, which means it won't work anymore, and that's not fair. The new entry in the Oxford English Dictionary for fidget spinners is going to be the kid's unfair toy. Can I just say, I'm going to submit that. These are not fair. It's funny when you ask different people what their interpretation of fair is. You ask one person what's fair, and you ask a different person what's fair, and you'll get two different opinions. You ever notice that? I watched a TV program a few months ago on telly. It's one of these reality TV shows on Channel 5. Some of you may have seen it. It's called Can't Pay, We'll Take It Away. It's actually, if you think about it, on face value, you think it's entertaining. But when you watch it, I actually got a little bit depressed. This idea that these debt collectors the cameras follow these debt collectors, and they go and they try and repossess people's property to pay off these debts or get money back that people owe. And this one particular episode, I found particularly harrowing. There was this 7-year-old girl that answered the door when the debt collectors knocked at the door. And they said, hello, is your mummy in? She said, no, my mummy's at work. She said, so what are you doing here? I'm looking after my 4-year-old brother. And it turns out that the mother had recently come into the country with the husband. The husband had left them. No notice, she'd just gone. And the only way that the mum could afford to provide for her and her kids was to leave her children each and every day, to leave her 7-year-old daughter to look after the 4-year-old son so that she could just about scrape enough together to get the money to eat. And of course, they were in massive debt. And I tell you, after I watched that episode, I was an emotional wreck. I haven't watched it since. There was another story that I read up on, which had this, there was this man and this woman that they loved each other very much. They got married. The guy was a great guy. And they had two children together, and they had two boys. And one day, just completely unexpectedly, the husband died. It was absolute disaster. And so this woman, who is now a widow, is coping with the prospect of raising these two children, these two boys, on her own. She's got no money, no income, nothing to provide for. And to make it even worse, it turned out that the dad, who was a good guy, like I said, but he'd run up a huge debt. Now, he probably intended to pay it off, but obviously he died, and this debt legally passed to the widow, and she had no way to pay this money off. And as the debt collectors came and knocked at the door and she answered the door, you could tell the look on her face was like, what are you doing here? I'm mourning, I'm grieving for my husband. The debt collector goes, I'm sorry, love, but you owe me, and I intend to collect on this debt. She goes, you've got to have a heart. I've just lost my husband. I have two children to provide for. Can't you see I've got nothing? My house is bare. I don't have a stick of furniture at all to my name. The debt collector says, I have heard that all before. That is not my problem. You are going to pay me, and I'm going to see to it that you pay me. And let me tell you something else, lady. Next week, I'm coming back, and I'm going to bring some friends with me. And if you cannot pay what you owe me, I'm taking your children. The lady goes, you're having a laugh. She says, you're joking. There is no way that you have the right to take my children off me. He says, that's where you're wrong, he says. He says, the law says this. He says, if you cannot pay me, I can take your children. And I will put your children to work, and these children will work as my slaves until such time as they pay off the debt that you owe me. And at this point, you're thinking, that's not a true story. Two Kings 4. One day, the wife of a man from a company of prophets called out to Elisha, your servant, my husband, is dead. You well know what a good man he was, devoted to God. And now the man to whom he was in debt is on his way to collect by taking my two children as slaves. Elisha, the prophet, said, I wonder how I can be of help. Tell me, what do you have in your house? Nothing, she says. Well, I do have a little oil. Here's what you do, said Elisha. Go up and down the street and borrow jugs and bowls from all your neighbors, and not just a few, all you can get. Then come home, lock your door behind you, you and your sons, pour oil into each container. When each is full, set it aside. She did what he said. She locked the door behind her and her sons. As they brought the containers to her, she filled them. When all the jugs and bowls were full, she said to one of her sons, another jug, please. He said, that's it. There are no more jugs. Then the oil stopped. She went and told the story to the man of God. He said, go sell the oil and make good on your debts. Live both you and your sons on what's left. Now you see where I got my story from. So the time in history that we're looking at here, it's about 850 BC when the nation of Israel has been divided into a north kingdom and a south kingdom. And it's the north kingdom that we're looking at. Now, this north kingdom's got a king who's not doing very well. He and the nation have turned their back on God, and things have started to go wrong. The enemies of the kingdom are getting stronger. The economy is getting weaker, and instead of the nation looking to God for the answers to these problems, they're looking inwardly to themselves and to false gods and false prophets. And in the midst of all of these issues that are going on, people on a personal level are really suffering. I mean, emotionally, wealth, difficulties, all coming down, all filtering down through to the issues of bad leadership and bad governance in the country. Anybody notice any similarities there at all with current day. I'm just saying. And in the midst of this, we look at this one woman who married a servant of God. So he was in the ministry. He was a good guy. And this godly man dies in the middle of all of Israel's trouble. You see, now he's left his family in a bit of a bind because he's run up very large debts. Some theologians who've studied the scriptures and other documents have speculated who this guy who died was. They think he might have been a guy called Obadiah. Now, you may have heard of Obadiah. Obadiah was the palace administrator to King Ahab, the king who was in charge at the time. And you may have heard of Ahab because Mr. James Cartwright preached so eloquently on it the other week. And he mentioned King Ahab's wife, a lady called Jezebel. And Jezebel had made it her mission to go and slaughter all the prophets of God. Now, Obadiah was a good God-fearing man, and he was trying to secretly hide 100 of God's prophets. He put 50 in one cave and 50 in another, and he was bringing them food and water and just trying to keep them safe and hidden and alive. Now, if indeed Obadiah was the husband, you can understand why he might have run up a bit of a debt, because he's trying to look after secretly 100 prophets. Now, we may never really know whether Obadiah was the husband or whether he wasn't. Like I say, it's just speculation. But one thing is certain. The debt that he left is now passed on, and there's a responsibility of his widow. And she has got serious problems. To make issues worse, the creditors are banging on the door. They size up the situation. They look at her and say, you're probably too old to work and earn. We can see you've got nothing. And they realize the only way they can recoup this debt is to take children into slavery, which by law in those days was allowed, and the children had to work until the debt was paid off. And supposedly you got released, but there are plenty of examples in the Old Testament of where the laws of slavery were abused. And so there was no guarantee that even when these sons had earned off the debt, they would ever see release. And the widow's dealing with this situation going, I can't take it all in. I don't know what to do. God, you can hear her crying it out, can't you? God, it's not fair. Yeah. Why am I in this situation? How has this happened to me? Whichever way you look at that story, it doesn't sound fair. No. The husband was a man of God, but he dies. He cops it. And she inherits the debt. Is that fair? The kids are going to be taken off her. Is that fair? It reeks of unfairness. In everyday life, I hear this a lot. God, why is this happening? It's not fair. You know, I it's not my fault I'm in the situation that I'm in. I'm not irresponsible. At least I'm not as irresponsible as the person down the street. And yet, I'm suffering hardship through recession, through austerity, through difficulties that other people brought me. It's not fair, God. And we all have this idea of what is fair. What do we mean when we say fair? Because if by fair we mean we think we should be treated the same as the average of everybody in the world, let me tell you what fair would mean. Fair would mean you had no electricity, no running water, no gas, no utilities, no personal hygiene, and you would earn under £1,000 a year. A year. Is that what you mean when you say it's not fair? Because everybody's view of fair is very subjective. The Bible is full of testimonies about people who were in situations that they were put in that you could argue were not fair. Yeah. The reason for those stories being in the Bible isn't to debate about whether they were fair or not. It's to see what God brings out of the situation. It's to see how God provides and brings people through those situations. I've got to tell you, and this is the good news, ladies and gentlemen, God is not into fair. Now, I didn't say that God isn't righteous and just, but he's not into fair, at least not the way that we think of the word fair. This story is no exception to that rule. This story about the widow. But it is a story that is included in the Bible. It shows us that you may be tested, but God can be trusted. Yeah. So let's go back to this story about the widow. let's just have a look at it. I'd like to bring out of it, if I may, 4 points that show maybe how when there's a bad situation that's arisen. Maybe it's one that you're calling unfair, I don't know. But when you're in a bad situation, maybe these 4 points I'm going to tell you, maybe these 4 points I'm going to talk to you, maybe these 4 points are the ways that you could do a step-by-step process to see you through that difficult situation. Is that okay? 4 points, right? So, step number one, realize that the solution to your problem often begins with what you do have, not with what you don't have. Verse 2, Elisha said, I wonder how I can be of help. Tell me, what do you have in the house? Nothing, she said. Well, I do have a little oil. You see, you can understand, and rightfully so, this woman's probably quite emotional. And sometimes when we're in the midst of emotion and a horrible situation and somebody says, well, what about this? You just go, are you not listening? Have I not just said the problem? Don't you understand what I'm going through? And sometimes your emotion blinds you to what you do have. You see, the prophet goes, okay, how can I help? Tell me what you've got. She's going, are you deaf? You're not listening to a word I've just said. I've got nothing. And you can imagine Elisha going, okay, just take a moment. Just calm down. Think. Relax. Focus. Do you really mean nothing? And she goes, well, I've got a very, 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 very small pot of oil, if you're going to split hairs. To her, that was pretty much nothing. To God, that was everything. You see, we deal with a God that can make a lot out of a little. Yeah. And I don't need to tell you every single story in the Bible about where God's multiplied, like the feeding of 5,000, where 5 loaves and 2 small fish feeds 5,000 people. Or to say nothing about the fact that we only had 12 disciples, but they were world changers. Yeah. Only a small group of guys. God can make a lot happen out of just a little, but he can help us overcome circumstances as long as we surrender whatever little we have to him.
That's right.
Step two, be willing to do whatever it takes. Verse 3 and 4 says, here's what you do, said Elisha. Go up and down the street and borrow jugs and bowls from all your neighbors, and not just a few, all you can get. Then come home, lock the door behind you, you and your sons. Pour oil into each container. When each is full, set it aside. So here, Elisha's kind of, he's breaking it down into a two-step approach for us, saying this is now what you need to do. The first thing he's saying to you is, you got to have some humility in this. You've got to go and ask. You've got to listen to my advice. You've got to do what I say. You've got to go and knock at people's doors. Hello? Yeah. Who's that there? You may not know me. I'm your neighbor from a few houses down. Yes, I've seen you around. Okay, what can I do for you? I'd like to borrow as many pots, jars, and receptacles as you have, please. I see. Not a cup of sugar then. No, I just need your jars. What are you going to do with them? I don't really know. But I'm in a bit of a pickle. And the man of God has said, come and collect as many of them as you can. So, hey, I've nothing to lose at this moment. Please, I beg of you, may I have all your jars, yes or no? That's got to take a little bit of humility. You know, it's difficult to ask people for things sometimes. I read a news story the other month, a true news story, about this burglar, this thief. He climbed up a fire escape onto the roof of a high-rise block of flats, and the skylight of the top flat was open, and his plan was to drop himself down through the skylight and rob the flat. But as he tried to ease himself down through the skylight, he realized he was a little bit too, you know, it couldn't quite fit through, but not by much. So he thought, I know, if I take all my clothes off and drop them through this gap in the roof, then I'll be a bit thinner and I can drop down, put my clothes back on, rob the place, open the door, and I'm away. So that's what he did. He dropped all his clothes through the skylight, tried to get through, and realized he was stuck. trying to get through, and he realized he had no hope of escape. You're a burglar, and really what you need to do is cry for help. What do you do? So he's there getting colder, and he's shivering and thinking, how did I get myself in this situation? And ultimately, he has no choice but to start shouting, help, help, help. And this lady in one of two of the flats below, she's trying to look out of a window, trying to see what's going on. And eventually, she realizes what's going on, and she calls the police, and the police arrest him. Worst burglar ever. But you got to say, and I know that's a ridiculous situation, but he had to ask for help. What an embarrassing, what a horrible situation to ask for help. Sometimes it's difficult to ask for help. Yeah. But sometimes that's what you need to do. Yeah. That's the first thing that she had to do. The second thing, she had to put some effort in. Now, I don't mean by effort earning a miracle from God, because as far as I interpret the Bible, that is not what we're to do. You don't work and work and work and work, and then out you put a penny in the slot and out drops your miracle. That's not how God operates. But I do mean that she had to play her part in this miracle. Rather than what a lot of Christians do, which is say, oh God, I'm praying for my miracle, you do it. So a lot of us want that. We want our answer. We want to put our penny in and our miracle out the slot. We forget that we have a part to say. You see, my understanding and my experience of God is this is how God works. He says, most of the time he'll say, in order for me to do what you want me to do and bring what only I can bring to the situation, you first need to bring what only you can bring to this situation. He says, I will if you will. You show me what little you have. You may think it's insignificant, but that's for you to do. And when you've done that, I will enter the arena and I will bring at my disposal all the might and majesty that is under my power and my command. I will open the blessings of heaven upon you. But where's your bit? Step 3, act believing that God will show up. 2 Kings 4, 5 and 6 says, she left him and afterwards shut the door behind her and her sons. They brought the jars to her and she kept pouring. When all the jars were full, she said to her son, bring me another one. But he replied, there is not a jar left. Then the oil stopped flowing. When my brother and I were younger, my dad used to take us to the local swimming baths every Saturday morning. It's how my brother and I learned to swim. And in the foyer of the swimming baths was my first ever experience of a vending machine. The vending machine gave out bags of crisps. To be specific, salt and shake. Do you remember them? Rubbish. They're rubbish. The idea that they package the crisps and then they hide a little blue salt bag that you had to rip open, empty in your bag of crisps, hold it and shake it, and hopefully you don't crush them all to smithereens, is a silly, silly, silly idea. It's like them fruit corner yogurts. Just mix them up. I'm getting on a rant. Sorry. So we couldn't afford these crisps because they were 6p, ladies and gentlemen. 6p they were at the time. But one week, my brother and I, after weeks of just viewing this vending machine from afar, decided we were going to pool our pocket money. Now, I got 2p and my brother got 4p. And even if you're not very good at maths, you can probably work out where I'm going. So with our 6p that week, after we'd been swimming, and while my dad was busy talking to somebody that I knew, my brother and I snuck off to this vending machine. And we put our 6p in and we pressed our button. You know how these work, right? You press a number and a letter and we pick the flavour that we want. All salt and shake. So we go for salt and shake, and then you get this clicking sound, and this spiral starts to turn in the slot that you've chosen, and gradually edging forward comes a bag of crisps. I'll just get past you, mate. So we've got this situation where we are very excited that we get to share one whole bag of crisps. And so it comes to the front and then it drops. And so we think, great. And just as we're reaching down, we notice that this clicking is still going. And we look up and we cannot believe our luck, because the spiral is still turning. And out of this machine, edging forward, starts to come under the bag of crisps. We're going, come on, come on. And sure enough, this bag of crisps drops. And we're about to reach down. The clicking keeps going. I'm looking at my brother. He said, is this heaven? Is this what heaven is like? And one by one, bags of crisps come to the front. And this clicking keeps going. And we're just thinking, this is amazing. Click, drop, click, drop. And as the bags of crisps come, we're thinking, now, this is brilliant. We are going to feast tonight. We are going to have a midnight feast tonight. But how are we going to get all these bags of crisps home? We didn't quite have the same moral compass that we have when we're older. So as small boys, it's fair game, isn't it? That's ours, isn't it? That's ours. 13 bags of crisps, that's ours. It's nobody else's. But this clicking sound that's going on, we're thinking, this is going to alert one of the pool attendants, and they're going to come along and confiscate our crisps, and we can't have this. How do we get our crisps home? Ladies and gentlemen, how do you think I got the crisps home? How did me and my brother hide 13 bags of crisps? Well, I'm going to show you the polite place that they went. That's ours. That's that. Nobody can see that now. So I took my T-shirt in. My brother did the same. And we took the bags of crisps. And one by one, they went down our T-shirt and other places which I won't demonstrate. And when we had shared, you know, my brother had the lion's share. He's a bit older than me. When we had 13 bags of crisps in our T-shirt, we made our getaway. And we're walking to the car. We're a bit hunched over like this. And my dad's going, boys, are you okay? Oh, yeah, it was just a hard swim today, Dad. That extra length just got us at the end, Dad. So just get us home, get us home, get us home. And we made it home with 13 bags of crisps. I'm pretty sure to this day that machine is still clicking. I don't know if anybody ever realized that machine was clicking. Maybe when they came to collect the takings and found only 6p in the machine. If I sit down later and you hear a pop, you are going to forgive me, aren't you? I'll have missed one. The woman does what she can. But God often requires you to take the first step. This woman was behind closed doors. She shut the door. She's got a little flask of oil, and the prophet's told her to empty it. So what does she choose to do? Well, what could she have chosen to do? She could have chosen to look at this pot of oil and go, if I tip that in this massive jar, that ain't even going to coat the sides. It's not even going to drip to the bottom. Why don't I just hold on to what I've got? I mean, it's not much, but at least I'll have this. At least this will stave off hunger maybe for another day or two. At least I can make a few copper coins for this. She could have said that. Let me tell you, this had been a very different story if that's what she had done. Yeah. It's like, you know, like Moses leading the Israelites to the Red Sea and the Egyptians are chasing them to bring them back to slavery. Imagine if God had said to Moses, when he said, stick your arm out with your rod over the Red Sea, and Moses had gone, I don't think so, God, I'll look like a bit of a nana. With all these people following me, what a ridiculous thing to do. That would have made a very different reading Old Testament, wouldn't it, from that point onwards? It's the fact that she said, yes, I will do it. And I wish there was such thing as a video in those days. I would have loved to see scientifically, just from a curiosity point of view, how does this work? This oil's just pouring and there's this pot here and she starts pouring and she doesn't really know what to expect and neither do the boys, but she starts pouring and she's going, hey, boys, something not right here. It's filling up. Well, get another one. Quick, get another one. Get another one. Next, right. It's filling up. Lads, I can't believe this. Have you seen this? Am I dreaming? Get another one. Get another one. They're filling. You're not filling them quick enough. It's filling. It's getting to the top. Another one. Next. 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 Mum, there's no more. Stop. When that miracle is occurring, I bet her faith rose amazingly. But can I just tell you, the measure of that faith and the size of the miracle that God provided wasn't based on the faith she got by seeing the miracle. It was how big a miracle she prepared for. So if there'd been more pots, if she'd got three more pots, do you think the oil would have filled those? Well, my guess is, yeah. The size of the miracle that God gave wasn't directly linked to a faith after the miracle or even during the miracle. It was linked to how big a miracle she expected and what she provided for. Are you acting in such a way that believes that God will show up? Step four. Last step, and then I'm done. Honor God with your results. Verse 7, she went and told the man of God, and he said, go and sell the oil and pay the debts. You and your son can live on what is left. If we want to honor God, we've got to use the blessings for the purpose that he intended. Now, I don't know what season you're in. I don't know if you're in a season of difficulty, a season of lack, a season of plenty. I don't know if you've ever gone to God. God, I need you to come through. And if you do this for me, I will fill in the blank here, X, Y, Z, I don't know. And then God's come through for you, and you've completely forgotten what it was that you promised God. Notice the order of Elisha's instructions to the widow. He says, first of all, pay off your debt. There are numerous examples in the Old and the New Testament that cite the importance of paying people what you owe them. That came before providing for her own children. So the man of God says, you're going to get a miracle. She doesn't know what. The miracle happens. Question, was the miracle as big as she needed? Or was the miracle more than she needed? Because all she needed was enough money to stop the debt collectors taking her children. The miracle not only provided for what she'd asked for, but it also provided significantly more. Yeah. That is the grace of God. That is no question the grace of God wanting to bless her brains out. You see, we may ask for something, but if God blesses us and comes through, he will give us far more than we ever hope, dream, or imagine. But when you're blessed, can I just throw this in quickly at the end? What do you do with the leftovers? The excess, the more than you need? Because I think that in today's society, maybe, just maybe, there are people who would really appreciate you helping them out in whatever way, shape, or form. In the bit of the excess that God has blessed you with, I don't know, some of us, we sponsor a compassion child because we got a bit of money that we can spare every month. Or, you know, you maybe give a little bit to charity, or you go and pay somebody's bill for them when they can't manage it, or feed somebody with a meal. You just do something to say, God, I know you have provided me with more than I need. Yeah. How about sharing it around? Oh. What a thought. And so, my time's gone. You know that God often does more for us than we hope. And as we pray to God, like the vending machine story, just the machine starts clicking and I just get this picture of, for some of you, God wants to start heaven clicking. As you pray and you start with what you have, you say, God, it's not much, but I'll do my part. I bring it. And God says, well, okay, bring it. And this is what I need you to do. And you do whatever it takes. You do what you know God wants you to do. You don't sit back. You don't wait. You act, or the time may pass. You act believing. You say, God, I don't know how, but I do believe you're going to show up. And God is clicking. Heaven is clicking as his blessings start to fall. And it's not just one blessing. It's not just a small blessing. As heaven clicks and there's a floodgate in heaven of a dam just waiting to break with your blessings, with your name on it, waiting to break through. As heaven clicks and God's blessings drop. God could have provided the pots with the oil in. He didn't need to make the widow go and get them. He could have said, here's the pots full of oil, sell them, job done. But he wants to involve you in the miracle. That's what makes a difference. You brought through difficulty, not relying on your own strength, but God's, having a testimony to share with other people who may not believe the word of the Bible, but they can't deny your personal testimony of how God brought you through things. As heaven blesses and blesses and blesses because you've stuck it out, because you have had faith for your breakthrough. So church, believe. Be a part of the journey with God as he breaks through in situations in your life. Don't forget to thank God. And don't forget to come and share your testimonies with us when it's through. God bless you.